All right, welcome to your very own deep dive
Yeah.
into well, some pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah.
You chose to explore some excerpts
Right.
from David Hume's A Treatise of Human Nature. So, Hume, he was a pretty big deal back in the 18th
Oh,
century.
yeah, for sure. A
Yeah.
real philosophical rock star, asking questions that still
Oh, well, right.
bug us today.
Yeah. He was trying to figure out like the foundation of
Yeah, like how we even think, you know?
Yeah.
Like, where do our beliefs even come from?
That's it. And how does all that shape everything? You
Yeah.
know, like what we do, what we believe.
It's all connected.
Right. And it's not just some like, dusty old philosophy, right?
Model.
Hume's ideas pop up everywhere, like, in psychology, in
Right.
economics, even AI.
Absolutely. Centuries ahead of his time.
Seriously. So one of the things that really stuck out to me
Okay.
was Hume's take on geometry. Like, we think of
One, yeah.
geometry as this perfect system,
Right.
right? But Hume, he comes along and he's like, nope, even those ideas of perfect lines and shapes, they're not actually.
Yo, he was really challenging some of those foundational ideas of knowledge.
Yeah, how can that even be? I mean,
So it all boils down to this idea that everything we know ultimately comes from our experiences.
Right.
You know, he makes this distinction between what he calls impressions,
Okay.
which are those strong, vivid sensations like the taste of, you know, like a really good cup of coffee,
Okay.
and then ideas, which are like fainter
Okay.
copies of those impressions, like the memory of that taste later on.
Okay, so I'm starting to get this impression that even something as abstract as geometry, is somehow rooted in these basic like sensory experiences. But how does that make geometry imperfect?
So he's saying because our ideas about shapes and lines ultimately come from our senses, which aren't perfect,
Right.
those ideas can't be truly perfect either.
Yeah.
You know, think about it. Have you ever seen a perfectly straight line
No,
in real life?
right. Every line I've ever seen, it's got some little flaw, even if it's like microscopic.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So is she saying like our understanding of geometry is kind of like a house that's built on this
Yeah, I love that analogy.
slightly shaky foundation?
Yeah, and this matters because we rely on all sorts of
Yeah.
models, systems all the time
Right.
that are built on this idea of, you know, perfection, like
Yeah.
financial markets,
Right.
algorithms, even like climate models.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so Hume's skepticism is like a reminder, right? Like,
Yeah.
hey, remember, these models are built on ideas, not on some
Right.
perfect, unchangeable reality.
Which is, particularly relevant today when we're just like bombarded with data and predictions, right? I mean, it's just.
Yeah. It encourages us to be more critical,
Yeah.
to question those assumptions,
Yeah.
and not to just blindly trust
Right.
the models, even when they seem,
Right.
you know, really sophisticated.
This makes me think about, you see all these financial experts
Right.
making these predictions, based on historical trends. But what if those trends, don't actually hold up in the future?
Right.
It feels like there's this connection to Hume's
There is.
problem of induction here.
Yeah, that's one of his most famous
Yeah.
ideas of the problem of induction.
Yay.
He's basically saying no matter how many times we've seen something happen,
Right.
we can't be absolutely certain it will happen again in the future.
So you're telling me just because the stock market has always recovered after a crash
Yeah.
doesn't mean it's gonna,
It doesn't guarantee
do it
that,
again next time?
right? Doesn't
Yeah,
guarantee.
we can't like prove.
Yeah, we can't prove with 100% certainty.
Right, with 100% certainty that these patterns are going to,
Yeah. It's all about probability.
keep going. Right, and I remember Hume uses this,
Yeah.
a pretty colorful analogy to illustrate this, right?
He does. He goes.
He compares it to like
That's a good one.
a drunkard who keeps, overindulging even
Drinking.
after seeing a friend
Yeah.
die from the same behavior. It's, a little stark,
It's a bit grim, right?
but I think
It gets the point
it
across.
gets the point across.
Even when we have evidence that maybe things won't always go as planned, we
Yeah.
often fall back on
Yeah.
those assumptions.
But if we can never really be certain about the future,
Well, he's no.
doesn't that make planning and decision making, kind of.
No, he's not saying we should abandon planning altogether. No, not at all. What he's pushing us to do is to recognize that those beliefs about the future are based on probability, not certainty.
Okay.
It's a call for, you know, a more nuanced approach to how we, you know, assess risk and make decisions.
So it's more about understanding, like, the limits of our knowledge than, you know, giving into complete uncertainty.
Yeah, I think that's...
You know, it's almost, like, empowering in a way, you know?
It is. It's like a tool.
It's like a tool for navigating this, you know...
This world full of unknowns.
A world full of unknowns.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he, you know, he takes this even further, right?
Yeah, he does.
And he says, reason isn't the only thing, or even the main thing, that, you know, guides our actions. He's got this famous line where he says that reason is the slave of the passions.
Right. So we're not...
Which, are we just, like, ruled by...
Yeah, it's not quite...
By our emotion? That's simple. But
does logic and reason, like, you know, take a back seat?
He believed that, you know, reason alone can't motivate us to actually do anything.
Yeah.
It's our desires, our emotions that provide that, you know, the fuel for action.
Okay.
Reason just helps us figure out,
right,
you know, how to get what we want.
So even when we think we're being, like,
exactly
logical, there's all this...
there are underlying emotions at play.
Emotional stuff.
Yeah.
Influencing our choices.
Yeah. And you see this everywhere, right?
Right.
Think about advertising, politics, even just our personal relationships.
Yeah.
You know, it's all driven by emotions.
Yeah. He was onto something with that.
He was really onto something, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome back to our deep dive into the mind of David Hume.
So we left off with this idea that reason is the slave of the passions.
Right.
Which is, I don't know, it's a little unsettling.
Yeah, it's a powerful statement.
Yeah, I mean, what happens when our emotions lead us to do things that aren't, well, reasonable?
That's a question Hume grapples with, you know, throughout his work. And it leads us right into his thoughts on morality.
Okay.
He was deeply skeptical, you know, of absolute truths.
Yeah.
So how do we figure out
right
and wrong
in
a world without these fixed moral guidelines?
That's what I'm struggling with, like, if reason isn't the ultimate judge, are we just making up morality as we go along?
He wouldn't say we're making it up,
okay,
but rather discovering it through our interactions and the consequences of our actions.
So it's like a gut feeling about what's right and wrong.
In a way.
But isn't that awfully subjective?
Well,
what feels wrong to me might feel perfectly fine to someone else.
You're hitting on a key point there.
Yeah.
Hume acknowledges that element of subjectivity.
Okay.
He wasn't searching for some... grand universal rule book for morality.
Right.
He was looking at how humans actually behave and trying to understand those underlying principles that drive our moral judgments.
So I'm all for, you know, avoiding a universal rule book, but how does this gut feeling morality actually work in practice?
Yeah, it's a good question.
How do we figure out, you know, what to approve or disapprove of in the first place?
Well, Hume believes our moral sense is shaped by a few key factors, including our natural empathy for others.
Okay.
You know, that idea of sympathy we talked about earlier.
Right.
And our observations of the consequences that certain actions tend to have.
So if I see someone helping a lost child, my moral sense is like, yeah, good job.
Exactly.
Because I can imagine how relieved the parents must feel.
Exactly. And on the flip side, if you witness someone intentionally being cruel.
Yeah.
You might disapprove, not just because you feel for the victim, but also because you recognize that kind of behavior can harm you know, everyone in the long run.
So our actions are constantly being evaluated, not just for their impact on the individual, but for their ripple effects on the whole, you know, social fabric.
Yeah.
But the idea that morality boils down to feelings, it's still a little hard to swallow.
I understand. Think about it this way.
Okay.
How often do you make moral decisions based on just cold logic?
Yeah, no, that's true.
Don't you usually have some kind of gut feeling about what's right guiding you?
If I see someone drop their wallet, I don't stop to, like, calculate the, you know, economic benefits of returning it.
You just feel it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And I just act.
And that instinct, that feeling of what's right.
Yeah.
That's the bedrock of morality for Hume.
He acknowledges that, you know, those feelings can be influenced by our biases, cultural norms, even self-interest.
Right.
But in general, he believes our moral sense points us towards actions that create harmony and well-being for everyone.
So even though there's no like objective, ultimate moral truth, our shared human experiences and feelings create this kind of...
It's like this framework.
A moral framework.
Yeah, this shared intuition for...
Yeah, it's like an intuition for navigating the human experience.
Yeah.
Even if we can't perfectly articulate it.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay.
He's not saying, you know, anything goes.
Right.
Or that every individual's morality is equal.
Yeah.
There are core values like justice, fairness, kindness.
Right.
That are vital for any society to function.
Right. But those values emerge from our shared human experience.
Exactly.
Not from some
external like rule decree.
Yeah. This has like huge implications for all these like ethical dilemmas we're facing today.
Yeah.
AI, climate change, you know, social justice.
Everywhere.
All these issues are like so complex.
Yeah, they are.
And they evoke such strong emotion.
Right. And Hume's emphasis on feelings in moral decision making is incredibly relevant.
Yeah.
We're dealing with all these situations where it's, you know, it's hard to find common ground because
everyone's just coming.
Everyone is coming to the table with,
with such, you know, deeply felt beliefs.
Yeah, so,
it's easy to like get so caught up in our own convictions that we, you know, forget to even consider other people's experiences and perspectives.
And I think Hume would remind us that to tackle these ethical challenges, we need more than just intellectual debate.
Yeah, we need like dialogue.
Yeah, open dialogue, deep listening.
Yeah.
A real effort to cultivate empathy.
Right, to like, you know, really understand where people are coming from.
Exactly.
So more than just a philosophy, it's like
it's a call to action.
Call to action, right? It's about how we approach difficult conversations, bridge divides, and build a more ethical world.
I love that.
It's not just about, you know, what we think, but how we feel and how we connect with each other.
Absolutely.
Hume is like giving us this this framework for, you know, navigating the the messiness of being human.
The complexities of human existence.
Absolutely. One of the things that continues to fascinate me about Hume is, you know, how he connects these ideas about morality with his insights into human psychology.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Keep in mind, he was writing long before psychology was even like
a
formal field of study.
Right.
But his observations about how our minds work, you know, they're
spot on.
So insightful. I'm ready to delve into some Hume style psychology. What were some of his, you know, key insights?
Well, one of his most famous ideas is the association of ideas.
Okay.
He observed that our minds tend to link ideas together based on certain principles.
Okay.
Like resemblance, contiguity, and cause and effect.
So if I hear a song that was playing during like a memorable event, it might trigger like all these memories and emotions associated with that, you know, time and place.
The song and the memories are linked by their contiguity.
Exactly. Or if someone mentions, you know, lightning, I almost instantly think of thunder.
Right.
Because they're so closely linked in a,
in our experience. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. But what about, you know, cause and effect?
Yeah.
How does that fit into this association of ideas?
Well, Hume argued that our understanding of cause and effect isn't some innate knowledge we're born with, but rather something we learn through experience.
Okay.
We observe that certain events tend to happen in sequence, and over time, our minds create a link between those events.
So if I see a ball rolling towards a wall, I expect it to bounce back.
Right.
Because in my experience, that's what always happens.
Exactly.
It's not that I understand, like, you know, the physics behind it.
Right.
It's just that my mind has formed this association, right, based on...
Based on repeated observations.
Repeated observations.
And for Hume, that expectation isn't based on some deep understanding of, you know, the laws of physics.
Right, yeah.
But rather on the habit of our minds to connect those events.
So our brains are... You know, constantly making these predictions about the world. They are based on
Patterns from the past.
Patterns from the past. It's like we're running on, you know, a set of
It's like a set of mental shortcuts.
Mental shortcuts.
Yeah.
But doesn't that also like leave us open to making mistakes?
Well,
when those patterns don't hold up.
Right.
What happens when our shortcuts?
That's where Hume's skepticism comes. Blah, blah.
Lead us astray.
Back into play.
Yeah.
He understood that our reliance on experience
yeah.
can lead us to make
right.
faulty assumptions.
Especially when we encounter new or unusual.
Especially in those new situations. So we need to be, humble about the limits of our knowledge.
Yeah.
And, be open to revising our beliefs.
Exactly.
When we're presented with,
when we get
new information.
New information.
Yeah.
It's like he's cautioning us against becoming.
Yeah, against being too rigid or thinking.
Right, exactly. Yeah. For Hume, intellectual humility is.
It's a key virtue.
It's a key virtue.
It allows us to be lifelong learners.
Yeah.
To avoid dogmatism.
Yeah.
Prejudice.
Yeah.
And to approach the world with,
right, yeah.
a sense of curiosity and open-mindedness.
And this has never been more relevant, right?
It hasn't.
I mean, think about, how easy it is to get caught up in these
it's so easy.
Echo chambers online where we're just, constantly being fed information.
Right. Just confirms what we already believe.
It confirms our beliefs.
Hume would urge us to seek out diverse perspectives.
Right.
To be aware of our own biases.
Yeah.
To be willing to engage with ideas that challenge us.
Okay. So we've got, this moral sense that shapes our judgments about, right and wrong. And then we've got this association of ideas that helps us make sense of the world. Mm-hmm. But how do these two seemingly, separate concepts connect in Hume's philosophy?
That's the key question.
What's the link between, our psychology and our morality?
Well, for Hume, our emotions are at the heart of moral decision making.
Okay.
And he saw emotions as, intricately woven together with our thoughts and experiences.
All right, so it's all
it's all connected.
Connected.
Yeah, our moral sense isn't some separate faculty.
Right.
It's a part of how our minds work.
It's not just what we think, but how we feel.
Exactly.
That just shapes our moral compass.
Yeah. Yeah, can you give me an example?
Yeah, I mean, can you, how does this play out
in
real life?
Imagine you see a child fall and get hurt.
Okay.
You immediately feel empathy and concern.
Yeah.
That emotional response is a direct result of your moral sense kicking in.
Okay, so I feel bad for the kid, but how does that feeling connect to, my understanding of the world?
Well, that empathy might then lead you to act, right?
Okay.
To help the child, comfort them, make sure they're okay.
Yeah.
Right. And that action.
And that action.
Strengthens my belief.
Yeah, it can strengthen your belief.
That helping others is a good thing.
Right.
It's like this, feedback loop.
It is. Our emotions drive our actions.
Yeah.
And our actions solidify our beliefs.
About what's morally right.
Exactly.
Okay. I'm starting to see, how all these.
How it all fits together.
Pieces fit together.
Mm-hmm.
This is a lot to,
It is.
Wrap my head around.
A lot to digest.
Yeah. Is there anything else we need to, know about?
Well, there's always Hume's view of human nature.
More to explore with Hume.
Before we, move on.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've been exploring some pretty mind-bending ideas from David Hume.
Yeah, he's a challenging thinker.
Yeah, from his skepticism about reason to these, fascinating insights into morality, justice, and how the human mind works.
Yeah, it's all connected.
It's been a wild, ride.
It has been a journey.
But before we wrap up, I'm curious about, the real world impact of all this.
Yeah.
did Hume's radical ideas actually influence anyone back in the 18th century?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, he was a controversial figure back then.
I can imagine.
His ideas, they challenged some deeply held beliefs.
Yeah.
About reason, religion, the nature of knowledge.
I mean, it's like he was going around poking holes in everyone's, most cherished.
He ruffled some feathers.
Yeah, for sure. But surely someone must have,
of course,
recognized his, brilliance.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
While he faced criticism, Hume was a gifted writer and a really original thinker.
Yeah.
His work gradually gained traction, among intellectuals and philosophers across Europe.
Yeah. He even, became friends with some of these, leading thinkers of the Enlightenment.
Right. like Jean-Jacques Rousseau,
yeah,
Adam Smith.
Speaking of Adam Smith,
yeah,
wasn't he like, you know, the father of modern economics?
That's right, yeah.
I'm wondering if, you know, Hume had any influence
yeah, definitely.
On his, you know.
The Hume and Smith were actually close friends.
Groundbreaking work.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they would engage in these, you know,
yeah.
lively intellectual debates.
Right.
They shared this fascination
yeah.
with human nature
okay.
and how it shapes our social and economic behaviors.
Yeah.
And Hume's ideas about self-interest, mm-hmm. sympathy,
yeah.
you know, the role of emotions in decision making.
Right.
They really had a significant influence
okay.
on Smith's economic theories.
So Hume's ideas, they weren't just these, you know,
yeah.
abstract philosophical
Angle.
Musings.
Yeah.
They actually had, like, you know, practical implications
mm-hmm.
for economics, for politics.
Absolutely.
It's amazing to think that this, you know,
I know.
Skepticism about reason
yeah.
could have shaped the way we, you know,
that is remarkable.
Think about markets and societies.
Well, that's the power of a truly original thinker.
Right.
You know, Hume's work
yeah.
offered a new lens
right.
to view human behavior
yeah.
and social systems.
And his ideas, they're still, you know, resonate.
They resonate today.
Today.
Yeah. With economists,
yeah.
psychologists. Yeah. Political scientist.
So even though he was a, you know.
Yeah, even though he was.
A bit of a rebel in his day.
A bit of a rebel.
Hume's ideas helped shape
Absolutely.
The modern world.
Yeah, he did.
In these, you know, pretty profound ways.
Profound ways.
Yeah, it's, you know.
It's inspiring.
Inspiring to think that
yeah.
one person's questioning yeah. can.
Yeah, that one person's questioning can have
for such a
lasting impact.
Lasting impact.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
And his influence extends,
yeah.
you know, far beyond just those specific fields
yeah.
like
yeah.
economics or politics.
Right. It's his emphasis on, you know.
Yeah, his approach to knowledge.
Experience
yeah.
and observation.
Yeah.
His questioning of, you
yeah.
know.
The grand systems.
These grand systems. His
yeah.
focus on the, you know, the messy realities.
The messiness of human nature.
Of human nature.
Yeah.
All of these have, you know.
It shaped how we
shape how we approach
knowledge and inquiry.
Knowledge and inquiry
yeah.
in so many different fields.
Absolutely.
It's like he, you know,
gave us these
a new set of tools.
New tools for understanding the world.
Yeah, understanding the world. Right. That embraced, you know,
complexity
and nuance.
Nuance.
Instead of, you know, clinging to this
yeah.
absolute certainty.
Yeah, the absolute certainty.
Well, yeah.
Which is, you know, so tempting.
Yeah, and those tools.
Those tools are.
You know,
proven incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they've helped us.
Yeah, they help us
see the world in all its
richness.
You know, richness,
mm-hmm.
and to you know, appreciate the many factors.
Yeah, all the factors
that you know shape our understanding.
That shape our understanding
of reality.
Of reality, yeah.
Well, that brings our you know
yeah.
deep dive into
it does
David Hume's A Treatise of Human Nature
right
to a close.
It's been a pleasure.
We've you know,
exploring these ideas.
We've covered a lot of ground
yeah.
from, you know, his skepticism about reason to his you know,
his insights into morality. Fascinating insights into
just
morality and justice.
The workings of the mind.
And the workings of, you know.
Yeah.
The human mind.
All connected.
It's been a, you know,
attached.
True pleasure exploring these ideas with you.
Likewise.
Hopefully this deep dive has, you know.
Yeah, I hope it sparked some curiosity.
Ignited your curiosity.
Like Hume.
About Hume and, you know, giving you some new frameworks for
For thinking about
the big question.
Yeah, the big question.
In life, absolutely. It's been, you know.
Well, fun. Remember, Hume's work is full of, you know, challenges, provocations,
yeah.
thought-provoking insights
yeah.
that can really enrich our, you know,
yeah.
understanding of the human experience.
If you're, you know, intrigued by what we've.
Yeah, I encourage you to explore more of his writings.
Discussed.
Yeah.
I encourage you to, you know.
Yeah, and see.
Explore more of his, you know.
What other gems you can uncover.
Writings.
Yeah, I know.
And see what other, you know.
What other insights you can.
Gems you can uncover.
Find.
Who knows? You might even find yourself, you know.
Yeah, you might even find yourself questioning.
Questioning some of your own.
Some of your own assumptions.
Yeah. Right? That's the beauty.
Long-held assumption.
Yeah, that's the beauty of engaging with a thinker like Hume.
Along the way. You know,
yeah.
That's the beauty of
He pushes us to
engaging with a thinker like him.
Yeah, he pushes us to think critically.
He pushes us to, you know,
to embrace uncertainty.
Think critically.
To never stop questioning.
To embrace uncertainty and to, you know, never stop questioning.
Yeah.
The world around us.
The world around us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well,
thanks for joining us.
Joining us on this, you know.
On this intellectual journey.
Intellectual journey. Until next time, keep those minds open.
Keep those minds open.
And those questions flowing.
Yeah, and those questions flowing.